From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, what is happening in Chicago? Can we expect the National Guard moving in? Also, an immigration crackdown. We'll talk more about that. It's all coming up here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler is back with us. He's professor emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Patrick Smith. He's co-host of a new show on member station WBEZ. It's called Say More. And Patrick, it's always good to have you with us. Appreciate you joining us this week.
Very happy to be here.
Patrick, you've covered public safety in Chicago for a long time now. The city seems to be a little on edge right now because we're not sure what's going to happen here over the next few days, but it sure sounds like something's going to happen. Give us an update as we sit here to record this show on a Friday morning just before noon.
Yeah, the city is absolutely on edge. I mean, you're hearing from residents. I think people are very, very tuned in. And the reason we're so on edge is because President Donald Trump keeps making statements and sometimes contradictory statements. Sometimes he sort of seems to be off the cuff musing about some very serious stuff, things that will have a big impact on the people of Chicago, the people of this region. One is a pledge to send in a sort of surge of federal agents who will presumably, and this is based on, you know, what Tom Homan, the Homeland Security czar, said, be mostly assisting in federal immigration enforcement. And then, so there's that, which we do think is going to happen, and that President Trump has talked about, you know, sending in a big influx of federal agents to make federal arrests. And then there's that second question that you're alluding to that you talked about, which is whether or not we're going to see National Guard troops on the ground here in Chicago the way that we saw in Los Angeles earlier this year, the way that we are currently right now seeing in Washington, D.C. And that, I think, you know, based on our reporting, based on people we're talking to, we're pretty confident that there will be that influx of federal agents and that we will see even more immigration enforcement at some point this month. The big question is the National Guard coming? If they do come, why would they be here and what exactly would they be doing?
Yeah, and Patrick, there's talk, I think, from Governor Pritzker and others that this may coincide with Mexican Independence Day celebrations that could be happening, and those are coming up here in Chicago. Is that also still the thought in Chicago right now?
Absolutely. So Mexican Independence Day is officially September 16th, but there are celebrations scheduled for this weekend and then next weekend. We've already seen a big downtown event canceled. Another suburban parade for this weekend has been canceled. A parade that's scheduled for this weekend in the Pilsen neighborhood here in Chicago. That, at least as of right now, is still planning to go on, but they're going to have, you know, they think it's going to be a much smaller event. There's going to be sort of checkpoints and other precautions put in place. Not checkpoints, but precautions put in place. And, you know, talking to people who live in the neighborhoods, people who live in neighborhoods that have a lot of Mexicans or Mexican-Americans, the celebrations are expected to be muted. There's less sort of people flying flags. There's more fear. And it's hard not to feel like that is intentional. And it could be that this is all just about uncertainty and we won't actually see the enhanced enforcement. But I think that the leaders on the ground here are anticipating more immigration arrests and just more of a presence, you know, maybe an intimidating presence at celebrations around Mexican Independence Day.
And Charlie, there's not a lot the state really can do if the feds want to come in with this stuff, except, you know, not assist. I think that's been talked about. Don't assist them if you're the Chicago police, local authorities, but also to sort of keep an eye on what they're doing and possibly even to take them to court. I think that's very likely if this occurs. So in some ways, you know, the Chicago, the locals and also state officials are really just in a wait and see position right now. Isn't that the way you see it?
Yeah. And as Patrick said, the most likely thing is that, yeah, there'll be this massive immigration enforcement and it'll be timed to interfere with the Mexican Independence Day parades, and they'll just round up people, basically anybody who is brown skinned and speaks with an accent. They'll round them up and ship them off who knows where. And later on, they'll try and sort out, well, is this person a legal citizen or not? And the fact of the matter is that the governor and local authorities in Chicago and Cook County really can't stop ICE. But on the other hand, they've said that local law enforcement is not going to cooperate with ICE. And they're not going to, for example, if I'm an undocumented person, I get picked up for speeding, they're not going to tell ICE, hey, we got Wheeler and he's an illegal, come get him. So there's going to be no cooperation at all between them. And they're not going to allow ICE to use police headquarters for their work or any of that stuff. But ICE is going to come, that's for sure. And one of the things that Governor Pritzker and others have warned about, and Pritzker did it yesterday, and this is a quote from Pritzker, part of their kind of nefarious plan is to begin with ICE, cause mayhem on the ground, by doing that, say that there's need for military troops on the ground to protect ICE. And so he's telling folks, if you're going to protest, please protest peacefully. Don't give them any reason to call the National Guard or military troops of other types. And so that's the kind of the expectation, is that Donald Trump would dearly love for there to be some kind of violence in Chicago to justify him descending the National Guard, because as we all know, in his words, Chicago is just a hellhole, and it's worse than Afghanistan. It's one of the worst places on earth, and all the rest of this nonsense and malarkey that he's spewing about the city. And one of the interesting things that other reporters have pointed out, if you look at crime rates, there are a lot of cities that have worse crime rates than Chicago. And the ones that Trump is looking at happen to be in states with Democratic governors. And the cities that have high crime rates, Texas, for example, have Republican governors. And so Trump's not looking at them at all. So it's all, in my mind, it's all kind of a performance. It's all theater. It's all about the optics of it more than it is any substantive effort to deal with real issues.
Patrick, you've covered public safety for a long time in Chicago. What is the real lay of the land right now when it comes to violent crime? Of course, we saw an outbreak of violent crime that occurred during Labor Day weekend, and that certainly gave people some ammunition to say, hey, there is something happening here. We need the guard to come in. But we have seen the crime rate really come down, especially from the pandemic. Is that correct?
That is correct. You know, we had if you look at sort of murder rates and other violent crime rates, especially around shootings here in Chicago, we had a big spike in 2016. Then the numbers kind of fell. And then during the pandemic, right after the killing of George Floyd and the protests around that, Chicago, like lots of other cities, saw a huge increase in gun violence in 2020, 2021. And then we've been seeing it fall in the years since. And this is all part of national trends. And I do think it's worth saying, we're all journalists, and so we can see BS rhetoric for what it is, but we also should be honest about what's going on. The violence is too high in Chicago, and Chicago saw an increase in shootings that like the country did, but the increase here was worse. And for a while, Chicago was not falling as quickly as other parts of the country. But we are at a point right now, my colleague Chip Mitchell just did a story, a data analysis that shows murders are at the lowest level for this summer. So June, July, and August, we had the fewest murders in that 3-month span of any year since 1965. So that's 60 years. So the numbers are too high. We don't want anybody to be shot or killed. And I think as journalists, we should still report when there's violence, when we see outbreaks of violence like we saw over the Labor Day weekend. But it's hard to say, it's hard for me to believe that when you look at lowest numbers we've had in 60 years, to then also say, oh my God, this is such a horrible problem that we need to send in the National Guard, or that there's something unique going on here that demands the National Guard. And so, to Charlie's point, because of my work as a reporter on public safety and then as an editor, I've spoken to a lot of people who live in neighborhoods with high levels of gun violence. I've spoken to people who work in those neighborhoods. I've spoken to criminologists, other experts. They're pretty united that that a military presence is not what it would take or even helpful in the long-term goal of reducing violence. And that there are things that the federal government could do to drive down violence. But as Charlie's saying, there's not really any connection between sending in the National Guard and the facts on the ground right now when it comes to gun violence.
Yeah, and Charlie, I would think too, if this was such a important thing to do almost immediately, it would have been done more immediately. We've been talking about this for a couple of weeks. Trump waffles back and forth on whether or not something is going to happen. So it's playing politics. I think everybody can kind of see that. There's politics on both sides of this, Democrats as well. But Charlie, I mean, from a political standpoint, I was looking at this and thinking, how is Trump harmed politically by doing this? I don't think he is. I think with his base, he probably benefits from this type of talk and maybe from additional action that could be taken.
Oh, sure. And that's what it's all about. It's appealing to his base, appealing to the folks out there who believe that our country is threatened by this invasion of dark-skinned immigrants from Spanish-speaking countries, and that we have to preserve the good old American way and white nationalism and all of this because I don't want to offend anybody. I won't use what I really think about it, but all this nonsense, and that appeals to his base. Those folks eat it up. And so he keeps doing it. But as Patrick suggested, there are real things that could be done to help. One of the things that Trump did is he clawed back, I don't know how many millions of dollars that were to go for violence prevention programs, which have shown that they work, where they have community organizers who go out and they go to those high crime neighborhoods and work particularly with young people to try and get them into conflict resolution situations, to try and negotiate between gangs, to try and bring about a more peaceful atmosphere, or even something as simple as providing additional money to hire more Chicago police. Because if you think about it, if I'm a National Guardsman, say from Houston, Texas, and suddenly I'm in Chicago and sent to the West Side, I'm not going to know up from down. I'll have no idea who these folks are, what the alliances are, what the lay of the land is. So what'll happen is if I'm smart, I'll just go down to Millennium Park, I'll pose by the Bean, I'll strut up and down Michigan Avenue, and that'll be it.
Yeah, and to Charlie's point, President Trump is sending out fundraising emails based around the his promise to take action in Chicago. And I want to also just to say, our reporter Sophie Sherry last week went down to an area of Chicago that's referred to as O Block. The mo you know It's had the most shootings of any block in the city since 2010. And they've seen a reduction in the last couple of years, the same way the rest of the city has. And the residents there said, it feels safer, but it's still not safe enough. Some of the young people especially said, no, I don't feel safe. I have to watch my back all the time. I'm still worried. It is not as if in the areas with the highest level of violence that people are like, oh, everything is amazing. Everything's fine. It's all fixed. But they all really spoke with one voice in saying, but the National Guard is not what we need, and it wouldn't help us.
Yeah, I don't want to make people think as though we're saying that, oh, Chicago's completely safe. It's got its problems too. And unfortunately, politicians on both sides have at times sort of downplayed the issues that are going on in some of these high crime areas because a lot of the residents there are often black, maybe they're Latino, the lower income areas in some cases. So again, these are areas that probably do need some attention, let's put it that way. But just whether or not this is the right attention. But you mentioned politics here, and you know, Democrats are also seeing an opportunity here, a way to sort of stand up against Trump. I mean, let's look at Gavin Newsom. You know, he pushed back pretty heavily on the National Guard coming into Los Angeles. Next thing you know, Gavin Newsom's now looking like maybe a front runner for the next presidential nomination of his party. J.B. Pritzker, I think, could be seeing some of the opportunity here as well. I mean, would you agree with that, Patrick?
I would. I think, you know, it's tricky because I think that these issues are real. And I think that if the people of Chicago are saying we do not want the National Guard here, that it's important for our political leaders to amplify that message. You know what I'll say without trying to come down on a side here. I think that Pritzker and John and Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson are representing how their constituents feel about this, and I think that that's their job. And so the president threatens to send in the National Guard, and nobody wants that. It's important for them to stand up and say we are not wanted here, and we think this is illegal. But I also think you're exactly right. I mean, just from a political standpoint, there's honestly no better enemy for someone like J.B. Pritzker or Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, who struggled with his approval ratings, to have than President Trump. I mean, they never look better to their Democratic voters than they do when they are fighting against President Trump, when they are speaking out against President Trump. And so, you know, I don't want to diminish the importance of the message, but I think you are absolutely right that this is politically convenient. I'm not saying it's convenient for us in the real world, but politically, it kind of works out well for them to get to be the warriors against President Trump and his allies. Mm.
Charlie, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's true. As I said earlier, there's no real danger of Pritzker falling afoul of the Democratic constituency by pointing out some of the inconsistencies in President Trump. Mm. Just as President Trump scores President Trump scores points by pointing out what a horrible place Illinois is and how terrible Chicago is, and it's worse than anywhere in the world, and all of that malarkey. So it's for both leaders playing to their base, it works out well. But as I said earlier, there are real solutions that could be done, but they require investing money. They don't require a show of force sending in National Guards to parade up and down Michigan Avenue. They require investing in programs to help youth, to deal with neighborhood violence, to improve schools, to hire more police, to provide more support services, all the kind of things that aren't as glamorous as or as flashy, or that won't get you a 10-second shot on Fox News. But really, studies have shown, and criminologists agree, these are the kind of grassroots efforts that will produce results.
So, Patrick, before we leave this topic, and I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this topic maybe for weeks to come, but if this does occur, let's say it starts this weekend. There's been some thought of that. And again, we're recording on a Friday morning, so things could have changed by the time you hear this show. But is this a likely long-term operation, do we think? I mean, we're seeing in Washington, I think the Trump administration's talking about extending the Guard and their stay there maybe until at least the end of November, possibly longer. So once this occurs, putting the genie back in the bottle may be a little hard, I would think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, as far as the surge in federal agents and the sort of immigration arrests, the reporting that we've had, you know, the Sun-Times, Violet Miller reported that this naval base here in the northern suburbs is going to be the sort of home base for those federal agents and the National Guard if they come. And that initial request was essentially for all of September. I think the Associated Press reported in the last couple of days that this sort of surge of federal agents and the immigration enforcement is going to last about 6 weeks, or, you know, at least 6 weeks. That is, I'm just talking about the federal agents and the federal arrests, the immigration arrests, which I think everyone agrees they have a legal right to do. You know, whether we think it's the best policy or not, or whether people want them here is one question. But as far as federal agents making federal arrests, they have a legal right to do that. And it seems like that surge is planned to last 4 to 6 weeks at least. As far as if the National Guard comes in here, I mean, there are so many legal questions around that. And there will be, well, so many other questions that how long it will last is a great question. I have no idea. But yeah, it seems like it will be more than a couple weeks.
Well, let me move on to a couple other things here while we still have a little bit of time. And Charlie, the State Board of Elections, this has sort of been going under the radar while all of this other discussion is taking place. But the Trump administration's been asking for a copy of the state's complete, unredacted voter registration database. And they say that they want to take a look at that because they want to make sure the state's keeping up with accuracy and up-to-date voter registration lists. But the state is pushing back, and this week the State Board of Elections says they're not going to provide that because it's to protect voters' sensitive personal information. We may have not heard the last on this either, but what is, you think, really behind this?
Well, that's a big question. What exactly does the federal government want with knowing the driver's license, the names, addresses, social security number, and all that information? What does the Department of Justice want with this? And it's not really been clear why they're asking for it. Now, the feds have said, we want to make sure that the state is complying with federal requirements to keep its voter rolls accurate and up to date. But I'm not sure, again, why they need to know my driver's license number to figure out whether or not I'm accurately reflected on the Sangamon County voter rolls. And so the Board of Elections replied to the feds that they will not hand over everything that the Trump administration wants, because state laws require the agency to protect voters' sensitive personal information. And a quote from the letter from the general counsel, Marty Malevitz, says, "We take Illinois' privacy very seriously. Data breaches and hacking are unfortunately common, and the disclosure of sensitive information contrary to state law would expose our residents to undue risk." The State Board has sent the same information that's available to political committees, that's available to other governmental agencies, but it does not include the personal identifying information that the feds are looking for. And a former attorney in the voting session of the Civil Rights Division, who's now the director of the Center for Election Innovation Research, a gentleman named David Becker, said that the department has no legal authority to demand voters' sensitive personal information, and it would have little use for the information, even if it could have access to it. So there's a lot of speculation as to why the feds want to compile this. And as a matter of fact, the instances of improper voting in Illinois are pretty few and far between. And there's really good maintenance of the voter rolls by the county clerks that do it, by the Chicago Board of Elections, and by the city election officials that do it in a half a dozen other cities in Illinois.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to read that quote from Becker, because that's a former DOJ attorney, in the voting section saying the DOJ doesn't have the right to this information, and frankly, the states are better at this anyway. And I'm basing my info, at least on reporting by Peter Hancock at Capital News Illinois. I thought one other thing I noticed in Peter's story was that Illinois is one of several states the DOJ has asked to turn over the databases. I find that interesting that it would just be several. You would think if this was some new initiative by the DOJ to just check voter rolls, you'd want every state's information. And so I'm curious what other states they've asked for and how they're deciding what states they want the voter rolls from.
Well, also, the Trump administration has been asking for more information from Northwestern University and a lot of other prominent schools across the country. And this week, Patrick, there was also some news that the president of Northwestern is now stepping down. So what is going on over there?
Yeah, just yesterday, President Michael Schill announced he was resigning. I believe he's only been president of Northwestern for 3 years. I think what you're talking about is exactly right. Northwestern is one of the universities that's been targeted by the Trump administration, had hundreds of millions of dollars of federal funding frozen, while they're being investigated by the administration. Northwestern was a school that had one of the more prominent pro-Palestinian encampments, last year. That encampment came down through a negotiation between university leaders, including Schill, and the activists who had put it up. Everyone, we did some reporting on that, and the people in the encampment, the administration, and maybe it's a sign it was a good compromise. I don't think anyone was absolutely pleased with the compromise, but everyone said this is how it's supposed to work. This came down peacefully. We talked it out. But there were accusations that Schill had made, basically made a deal with anti-Semites. I should point out that Michael Schill is Jewish. But that didn't stop him from being called before Congress to face accusations of essentially of being anti-Semitic or supporting anti-Semitism on campus. And then you saw the hundreds of millions of dollars frozen by the federal government once President Trump retook office. He is one of several university leaders across the country that we've seen step down, seemingly under direct pressure from the Trump administration as they kind of try to shape how universities teach and operate.
We'll continue to follow that story as well. It's time for our notes from the field. Charlie, we'll go to you first this week.
Well, the Illinois Flash Index fell slightly again in August for the fourth straight month. The latest reading is 101.7, down from 101.8 level in July. That was reported earlier this week by U of I Professor Emeritus Fred Geertz, who compiles the index for the University Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And as long as the index level is 100 or above, that means the Illinois economy is still growing. And the professor said the Illinois economy has been stable over the past 12 months, with the August index a year ago at 102. As we've noted in the past, this may be the soft landing hoped for a year ago when there was a fear of a looming recession. In other financial news, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, which is the General Assembly's fiscal gurus, pointed out that there was a mixed month for state revenues in August, with gains in personal income tax and sales tax outweighed some of the other areas that were down, like federal funds, so that the year over year, for the month of August this year compared to last year, was up slightly. For the year to date, through the first couple of months of the current fiscal year, FY 2026, revenues into the state's general funds grew by about $37 million, which is a very modest increase of 0.5%. Personal income tax were down on a net basis, as were corporate income tax, but sales tax revenues grew. So the bottom line is the change for the first couple of months of this fiscal year compared to the first couple of months of last fiscal year, we're up by $37 million, which is not a whole heck of a lot when you consider the size of the state's budget.
That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and WBEZ's Patrick Smith. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.